Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Thursday.
This is a good time. It's a happy Thursday. It is a happy Thursday. You're dang right it's a happy Thursday. Do you want to know why?
Well, it depends on who you're asking if it's a happy Thursday. Some people had a very busy morning.
Yes, some people had a very busy morning.
We'll get to that in a little bit. If you have not heard, gambling arrests from the FBI over...
Not a good morning for some people.
...in the NBA. We'll get to some of that. A sitting NBA coach. But I want to start with some good stuff. I was at the game last night. The Sabres, a 4-2 win over the Detroit Red Wings.
Yes.
Colton Ellis on TNT having his first NHL game, his first NHL win, performs very well in a game that was wildly entertaining. Again, funny enough, a random Wednesday game like that was against Ottawa where they just decided to play incredibly well. And it is a good sign from this team, Derek, that they were able to perform as well as they did to go into what should be really fun matchups with Toronto. We'll talk about that this morning and plenty of other things as well. Pat Malacaro coming up at 10:30 to talk the Blue Jays in the World Series tomorrow. Sal Capaccio at 11. The Bills got back to practice yesterday. Max Harrison looked pretty good in some of the videos I saw, at least. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And yeah, do want to start with the Sabres. Because, look, they have not, early signs from the week, but we talked about it earlier this week when they did lose to Montreal of you can't stack losses. You have to keep building on the good momentum that you were having in the way you were playing. That you pick up the win against Montreal, against Florida. You play well against Montreal or Ottawa and Florida. You play well against Montreal. Don't get the win. Don't even get a point. But then you go up against Detroit. You don't have your elite goaltender that's been playing well in Lyon. He finally gets a day off. But it's not Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. It's not Devon Levi. It's a random guy from another AHL organization that you happen to just claim off of waivers, kind of as a hope and a prayer. We like his numbers. We'll see what happens here. We just kind of need a body in here right now.
And we needed that body because the guy that we signed in the offseason was so bad he is unplayable. And we need a guy. This guy also now happens to be available who has been developed by another team and has similar numbers.
Yeah.
And is close to age on the goaltender that you are seeing as the future. Colton Ellis might make the long-term goaltending positioning with the Sabres a very interesting question if they do a three-man rotation in net again. And it is because it is earned by Ellis, and they know that they can't put him on waivers.
Right, because he will get claimed.
St. Louis will get him back immediately, if not somebody else. Remember what we said, though, on Tuesday about, like, hey, oh, it was yesterday. You've been a good soldier. Here's your opportunity.
Right, here's a few games. Let's see if you can put some good tape out there.
Well, he certainly did. There were a couple of rebounds that I think he'd want to clean up.
Right.
And he was very aggressive with the puck. There were times where he just would not cover it, or he'd pass it off before the whistle goes. And a little excitable a little worrisome when you see that. And it's like, okay.
Settle it down. I liked what you were saying, though, in the post game where it was, you know, part of them almost wanted to get a shot early to settle them down. And the Sabres came out as hot as they have all year.
Dominated a team.
And he didn't face a shot for what, the first 8 to 10 minutes?
It was 10.
It was 10 minutes.
It was 10 minutes, 8 seconds.
Yeah. I can understand a little bit of the jitters probably there. Loved seeing his whole family kind of go through the just plethora of emotions of he stops two breakaway chances, one right out of a penalty, and then the other one, I think late in the first, does so well against those. Isn't helped by his defense, I think, in both of the goals let up. But that was a game I was very nervous going into last night. When we found out literally during the show that Ellis would be starting, my immediate fear was, oh no, this is where we're going to get sadly, the Ottawa goalie performance from last week, where it's first NHL start, here we go, we like him. Oh no, he doesn't even look capable of playing at this level. And Ottawa's out of the game before they can even really realize it. I mean, they still put 4 goals away in that game as well. Let up 8, you're going to lose that game 9 times out of 10.
I wouldn't even say 9. You're probably 8. 8 is too much.
8 is too much.
8 is historically too much.
And that was a fear of mine last night going into it of like, you can't start. I know Lyon needed some rest. I understand that. But it did make me nervous. But to see that performance out of Colton Ellis was great to see. He's almost definitely going to get another go here on Saturday when they do the back-to-back against Toronto. And now we're looking at the situation there with the Sabres. Toronto is not playing well up to this point this year. They're the opposite of the Blue Jays. The Maple Leafs have not looked great to start this year. And the way the Sabres are playing, without their top-end guys producing, does point to, I'm not saying you're going to sweep Toronto this weekend. I'd be really, perfectly honest, shocked if they don't get at least one win out of the next two games.
I'd be a little peeved if they don't get one win out of these next two games. And it is turning back into a conversation you and I had on Tuesday where I mentioned, because you were a little like miffed about the fact that they didn't get a loser point. They didn't force a way into overtime, even though they were really playing well. And I told you it was only the first opportunity for them to do so. But if they keep playing like this, they're going to snag points where we don't expect them to. And welcome to that part of the equation. It's not like you weren't facing like whoever Ottawa trotted out there. Last couple goalies that you faced were Bobrovsky, John Gibson. And also
that's the fun part. It hasn't
Dobesh,
even been, yeah, it hasn't
who
even
had
been
to earn
the,
that.
It hasn't even been the backup goalies. You got that in Ottawa.
You made them pay for it. It is, however, you keep playing like this, and this is what I put out on Twitter today of – not today, but like more or less, like I've been saying this since the Florida game. You want to keep messing around and playing like this? The fans are ready to get hurt again. They're ready to emotionally invest as long as you look like a competent hockey team. The team that we saw in the first 3 games of this season is a thing of the past, clearly it looks like. The malaise is gone. It seems like maybe it was the shock of the Norris injury, like how down players were feeling or something like that.
Especially after his preseason, it looked like, oh, okay, he's going to be one of your top two players.
Yeah, and so maybe that was something. There's some credence to that theory. But then you also hear it from Tage Thompson, Rasmus Dahlin in postgame. Central message said very differently by the two players. Thompson's saying, it's not the end of the world, it's 3 games. And Dahlin saying, we have to fix this. And it looks like the core message between the two of them is there. Even though they're not the ones performing well, mm-hmm. The message has been received. We have to fix this. It is only game 4 entering where they've been now. Like, it's only after 3 games that we're 0-3. It's not the end of the world, but we do have to fix this.
Right.
And that part of it has been played out by the team from the net outward. The defense looks very stable right now. And that's without your big ticket item in Michael Kesselring. The offense is getting depth scoring. Your leaders are Jack Quinn, Zach Benson, Josh Doan. Thompson, Tuck, Dahlin, not mentioned here. You have won 3 of your last 4 games and looked very dominant doing so, contextually speaking. Analytically speaking, You can use any measurement you want. The Sabres have been a good hockey team these last four games and playing it consistently. It is how you do it game to game. If you are going to keep stacking performances like this together, it may not all be wins. But if you keep playing like this, good things are going to happen. Are you, at minimum, last year's team without the poo-poo stinky losing streak? Because if so, we're going dancing. That's a playoff team. If you're playing like this, night in and night out, you're a playoff team because you're going to get wins against a team that won five in a row and is at the top of the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get wins against a Toronto team that
looks even average.
Even when you've been bad,
mm-hmm.
them coming here is almost a death sentence more times than not. The legendary radio broadcaster with Toronto, Joe Bowen, calls it the House of Horrors. Even though Toronto fans flock the stands,
right, yeah.
Buffalo is not a great place for them. And that's your next game, home against Toronto, who, by the way, that fan base might have a peeking eye on something else that night.
I am so curious to see how that really does play out.
Very curious about that myself.
Because they move the times, that may not mean a ton.
They shuffled it by a half hour.
Right.
That's not changing much.
But I want to know if that is going to mean something. I think it should. Now, I'm saying this as a Buffalo fan where, yeah, like if a Sabres game is going on, but it's, you know, the Super Bowl or AFC Championship, right? Like we kind of know how that goes. Regular season team, you go over here. Playoff team, you're over here. We're going to pay attention
Matter
to this.
Matter of fact, we've had both of those at some times.
Yeah,
like the Bills playing in an AFC Championship game or a divisional game, and the Sabres have to play that morning.
Yeah, and it's like.
Or that afternoon.
You're over here. Well, we're going to pay attention, but we're not going to put all of our energy into it. We're going to be over here. You got to imagine a team making the World Series for the first time since the 90s.
Since 93, 32 years ago.
And have ultimately been somewhat of these like cardiac cat kind of like vibes where they're just, they're lively, they're fun, they're young. You would think a lot of Toronto sports fans would also mix the sports, Maple Leafs, Raptors, Blue Jays, that they would be like, it's early in the season. I don't care. I'm locking into this, especially it's early in the series.
I'm watching.
If they were already down 2-0, 3-0, if it does turn into a sweep, that's an entirely different story.
That's a different story.
This game, game one is tomorrow.
This is game one and game two. Game one at 8:06.
Mm-hmm.
About 8:06, 8:08, first pitch. We'll talk to Pat Malacaro, by the way, in 15 minutes about all of this. But, yeah, I'm curious what the crowd looks like because of that fact. Because there is a peeking eye on that, and it is, oh, here's my pot shot of the day. This is a team from Toronto that knows how to win a game seven. Okay, now that's over.
It's been the bugaboo.
It's been their bugaboo, but also.
Didn't the Raptors win their title in seven games?
They won a game seven against the 76ers.
That's right. That's
and
right.
I'm not sure if it was seven games against Golden State or not, but I do know there was a game seven when involved where Kawhi that shot.
Right. Yes. Yes. That might be, I think, what I'm thinking of.
So I'm curious about that. And that allows it to be Sabres territory maybe again for the first time in a long time. And it's just extenuating circumstances. Yeah. Regular season team. You go over here. I'll give you a pat on the head. We'll watch you on the side here. What's on the big screen? World Series. What's on the little TVs at the bar in Toronto? It's Sabres Leafs. Like, that's probably what it's going to be for these next 2 days.
They beat Golden State, by the way, in six.
Yes.
You were right, though, in the semifinals. They beat Philadelphia in seven. It's the shot.
It's that shot by Kawhi. So, again, what's going to be on the big TV in Toronto? Everywhere. World Series. Game one.
It's going to be
not a doubt.
Yeah.
Not a doubt. If the Sabres are on a big TV somewhere in Toronto and we have the range that somebody's listening, please let us know because I'd be shocked.
I'd be questioning
decision
making.
But
I'm just genuinely curious about that.
But there are probably also pure hockey fans that don't give a lick about baseball that
right.
are going to make sure that they
right.
make their way down because traffic's going to be a nightmare in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's going to be a one-of-one type thing. Saturday in More importantly.
Saturday in particular. That's why that game, I think, was moved a full 2 hours. That is the full
yes,
2 hours.
Yes, that's
yeah.
the full 2 hour one. But to get back on track here with the Sabres themselves, the way that they are playing right now, Toronto does look average. As a matter of fact, there was already a little bit of Anthony Stolarz said something a little too strong in postgame about William Nylander, and they had to clear the air on that one. Okay, we're doing this already, Toronto?
Seven games in, baby. Let's go.
Seven games in, we're having the drama fest, and this is without Mitch Marner there anymore? Okay, that's your choice. Let it be. The Atlantic, again, I'm not sure how bad it is, so to say. You've got Detroit and Montreal getting off to hot starts. I don't know if Tampa is as bad as their current record shows, though, either. But this is where the Sabres need to take advantage of an opportunity because they started slow. But most of the usual contenders and safe playoff picks for the Atlantic have also started slow. Montreal and Detroit have taken advantage of it in the truest fashion. Those are the teams that you last played. But now you don't even steal one from Detroit. You beat it out of them.
Yep.
Convincingly. If you turn this around very quickly and it turns into, what did I say the watermark is? 12 to 15. You get out of the first 12 to 15 and you're looking like a top three team in the Atlantic. We've been fooled before. As recently as last year, as a matter of fact. But it is more or less. Zach, you were at the game last night in the press box. I was there on Saturday. Same thing. Upstairs. And you can tell. The crowd wants to feel something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I joke, but even those middle-of-the-week games, it's a good crowd that is very lively.
And this is for a fan base that has dealt with 14 years of not being in the postseason. And more times than not, barely in the conversation for, I'd say, what, 12 of them?
Yeah, probably.
Now I'm looking at a team and a fan base that wants to get hurt again and wants to feel something. Zach, we put the tweet out and we had like 8 comments immediately on this thing. How tuned into the hockey team are you?
It makes it easy. They have very likable players. We've been burned by this too, but they have very likable players early. Josh Doan looks like a revelation for them in many ways. He's not a guy that's going to put up 90 points, not even close. If he's a guy that puts up 60 this year, I'll be thrilled. But he does all the little things really well. Jack Quinn is maybe having a bit of a renaissance here. He had a 3-point night last night. He does it, by the way, in 11 minutes on the ice.
He was very productive last night.
Very productive in the quote-unquote, you know, minimal amount of time that he had. Alex Lyon also coming in kind of has that intense attitude, and he looks like the goalie you've been looking for 15 years.
Zach Benson has yet to get into the goal column. He looks like the most impressive player on the ice at times on a team that has a roster with Rasmus Dahlin and Tage Thompson on it.
And on those two, and to add Alex Tuck to that, we've already mentioned it, and I won't begrudge any fans who are disheartened by the fact that they're winning, but those three really aren't doing anything. But at least for me, with them winning and those three not doing much, and it's the depth scoring that's showing up, that to me is a good sign. Thompson, Tuck, and Darlene are all too talented of players to not eventually figure it out. They're going to get going. I like, though, is that in years past, if those three are, you know, before Tuck, Darlene, and Thompson aren't popping off, they're in hell.
Yeah,
and they don't know what to do.
Last year's team, for example, does not survive the top three not producing like this.
Mm-hmm.
We're probably looking at a 1-6 start to the season.
And it's already done, over with, just move on.
Just move on.
Get me to the draft, or honestly, for many people, don't even mention them to me.
Yeah, it's pretty much you're dead to me already, and we're out of here. They're also doing this, by the way, with a good amount of injuries to their roster. Josh Norris is expected to be the 1C for this team on paper. He's gone after the first game. Jordan Greenway, another player that is often banged up. He has yet to return to the lineup. Defensively, Kesselring out. Still out from an offseason little injury that he picked up. Bryson gets concussed. You're playing with guys like Zach Metsa or Ryan Johnson is playing, only averaging 9 minutes a game. The defense, Connor Timmins has been fantastic as an addition for them. Playing more minutes than I think that he's maybe even comfortable with. He's been averaging 20.
Yeah.
He's averaging 20-32. Matias Samuelsson, being given a lesser role, has thrived in a sense. I would say he definitely looks like more of the player that got that extension in the first place as of late.
Looks good.
Don't make me regret those words. Because especially with Samuelsson, he's a guy that is a punching bag for a lot of players or a lot of fans.
Oh, yeah.
He's a punching bag for them because like he's not very physical when he needs to be. He doesn't answer the bell a lot in years past. This year, he's in those scrums. This year, he is involved in those plays. He is making good breakout passes. Oh, and Power. Power is playing third most minutes on the team right now, 22-18 per game.
Mm-hmm.
And he's doing a lot of the quiet things well. The penalty kill, he is featured heavily right now there. Something that in years past, people are probably terrified of.
Yeah.
You still want to see more out of him based on the contract that he signed. But right now, I'll take the, he's doing the quiet things well. But they even miss a game with Owen Power. That's the Rangers' disaster opening night. They miss a couple games with Samuelsson. They are dealing with the list of injuries that has almost matched the Bills, by the way. And the Bills have a 53-man roster.
They're getting through it.
They're getting through it. They're fighting through it. And to not have top production and to deal with the injuries that you are, to look as good as you've looked through four games and have a 3-1 record through those four games, and trying to overcome this 0-3 start, I bet you there are more curious faces right now than not.
So with that, 803-0550, the number to call. With the Sabres off to a little bit better of a start following that 0-3 start. They've won three of their last four. Are you tuned into the team? Are you getting there? Is it going to take a sweep of the Maple Leafs this weekend? Or are they just playing good hockey and you like it? They're getting a little feisty as well.
Are they spicy enough for
you? We haven't mentioned that either. Everyone seems to be willing to drop gloves at this point.
Kulik goes after the wrong guy yesterday on the Benson hit for Sider's interference call. Mm-hmm. Kulik just sees the nearest Red Wing and
goes right at him.
Let's go.
And so they've got a little bit of fight to them. Funny. They're performing well, and they good going to next week at 5-4, potentially taking out the Maple Leafs in two games. They look good. Toronto, not so much. But when we come back, we'll look at the other Toronto team, Blue Jays. World Series game number one in Toronto tomorrow night at 8 against the LA Dodgers. We'll talk to Pat Malacaro, get more on that when we come back. But first,
join WGR and Bud Light for a Buffalo Football Friday happy hour. Chopin Bulldog will be broadcasting live at Neighbor's Pub on Friday, October 31st, on a Halloween night from 3 to 7 p.m. at Neighbor's Pub, 337 Kenmore Ave. We will have your chance to win a Josh Allen jersey. No purchase necessary. Enjoy other live broadcasts coming up at Leo's and Mitchell's as well. Bud Light, easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Enjoy responsibly, 21 and older.
Wild pitch. High fly ball. Left field. Arozarena. Watches it go.
George Springer's three-run home run that effectively clinched a World Series spot for the Toronto Blue Jays. Game one of the World Series is tomorrow in Toronto as they will take on the LA Dodgers. We'll be hearing from the voice of the Buffalo Bisons, of course, the minor league affiliate of the Blue Jays, Pat Malacaro here in just a few moments. Do want to pass on some information, though. FBI officials are speaking now on the NBA gambling ring.
Yeah.
Everything going on there. The arrest made for Terry Rozier and Portland Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups. That might be the biggest part of this whole thing. A sitting NBA coach is arrested. They're not the exact same thing. It sounds more like Billups was in a legal poker ring tied to the mafia, which feels insane.
It sounds like a Mad Libs.
Yeah, just absolutely incredible. But we go now to the Western Hotline. Pat Malacaro, the voice of the Buffalo Bisons, joins us here as we get ready for what feels crazy, Pat. I you know, thinking about the expectations for this Blue Jays teams at the start of the year, I think World Series is a bit of a pipe dream, to put it lightly.
It was and it wasn't. I guess Mm-hmm. Last year, to me, was a season that the Blue Jays needed to do some reflection. They were expected to be a playoff team last year. So what Ross Atkins or Mark Shapiro did was they made a couple of trades this past offseason. They made some shrewd moves, even in season. But one thing the Blue Jays really did was they wanted to be the team that didn't strike out. They're not going to be a home run happy team like other teams in the American League, which is fine. If you can hit home runs and hit 2- and 3-run homers, that's going to win you ball games. The Blue Jays have a couple of guys that can hit homers. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is doing it in the playoffs, but really in the regular season, he will add the occasional power, but is a very good for average hitter. So what do the Blue Jays do? They go out and they make moves to be the team that strikes out the least, makes the most contact. We saw that start to really take shape once June rolled around. Late June, the Blue Jays sweep the Yankees up at Rogers Center, and they were off and running. And to me, from that point on, that was the statement series. We're for real. We need to make a run at this. We've got the roster to do it after a couple of years of disappointments, and we're seeing how that success has not only continued on, but is built as this season has gone on.
Pat, in order to continue talking about this, first of all, I need to hand you your flowers, which we did on Tuesday for Primetime Players when we mentioned that Pat Malacaro knows ball. Because the last time that you and I spoke about this, it was about can the Jays get themselves out of the 3-2 hole in the ALCS and get themselves to the World Series. And lo and behold, Pat, here we are talking about them getting ready to go here. So first of all, great job by you once again saying the Jays have been fantastic with their backs against the wall. And now I will say metaphorically, you've got the same kind of situation here against a Dodgers team that is the defending champions and has a roster on paper and in terms of spending that can make even an English Premier League team blush.
Yeah, and this isn't quite the Yankees murderer's row lineup, but this is pretty darn close, so let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I think this is going to be a very nip-and-tuck series, though. And the reason I say that is, yes, Shohei Ohtani put on a performance we have never seen before in the playoffs, and probably the greatest postseason performance that the baseball has ever seen. So, yes, he did that. He's been pedestrian for the most part the rest of the playoffs. Mookie Betts has been good, slightly above average, but not great. Freddie Freeman, older, dealt with an injury, got through the playoffs last year, still hasn't been that same player. So your top three guys haven't been necessarily your top three guys, where you guys having that conversation earlier today in a different sport. But I do think this shows the depth of the Dodgers. Other players have stepped up. Will Smith is an all-star catcher, and he is very good for the Dodgers in bringing what he brings to the table. They are so deep. And, you know, whether it be Teoscar Hernandez, other players, the pitching staff has been so good, and this is why they invest in adding Blake Snell, adding Tyler Glasnow, and shedding some of the pitchers that helped get them to the World Series last year. This is as complete as a roster as possible. But again, when you go back to what we talked about the Blue Jays, and the way that they're built to sustain and to stay in a series. And really, as long as the starting pitching, which has been very good, even Game 7, Shane Bieber bent but really didn't break. The starting pitching can be what we've seen for the last couple of months, in the playoffs included. This is going to be a very entertaining series.
Speaking of that pitching, by the way, Pat, really the fun story for the postseason for the Blue Jays in terms of the pitching has been Treya Savage, who went through the gauntlet of every minor league club all the way up to the Blue Jays, and now pitching, obviously going to be in the World Series. He's also pitched the second most innings, only behind Kevin Gausman. I mean, he has been one of the best players for these Blue Jays throughout this postseason run.
He has, and
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Really, the bugaboo against Trey Savage was his first appearance at whatever level it was at, and that happened in Buffalo as well. It's not good, especially the first inning. He's a very calm and stoic pitcher, but it's the internal nerves would get to him, and that would be something that would really rattle him in that open inning. Once he gets to the first, once he gets to that first start, he performs well. He didn't have that trial. The Blue Jays thrust him into a pennant chase when they needed a win in Tampa Bay against the Rays. He got the win for Toronto. He was rolling ever since. Yes, he has stumbled in the playoffs. He had one rough start in the playoffs, but has performed well outside of that. So here's a guy. He was drafted last year, suffered a collapsed lung, and didn't pitch again until the Arizona Fall League. That was by design, getting him healthy. We've seen a lot of teams do that with maybe an injured player, get them a couple of weeks down in the Arizona Fall League, which is going on right now, and get ready for spring training. And he did, and he has performed at every level. Only three appearances with the Bisons before being called up by the Blue Jays. So you talk about a fun young roster. A lot of the pitchers maybe on that pitching staff, just guys that don't know the moment is too big for them, right? It's the old young and dumb cliche, right? Like, guys just don't know how big the moment is until afterwards. And I'm not saying that's be a savage, but I do think there's some of that of, I want the ball. The moment isn't too big for me. I don't care that I'm a rookie. I don't care. I made six starts in the major leagues in my career. Give me the ball. So I'm half expecting Trey Savage to be the game one starter for the Toronto Blue Jays. John Schneider will meet the media in a couple of hours, announce the game one starter. He'll meet the media as well. So we don't know who it is yet, but it lines up too with your Savage likely being the game one starter for the Blue Jays. And what a story it's been.
An incredible story there. And the Blue Jays are not short on any storylines here, Pat, because Bo Bichette, he has announced that he's ready to go. He's good to go. But we'll officially get everything here today when it comes to the Blue Jays, what the roster might look like. If Bichette is coming back, Pat, what's the most logical way that the Blue Jays rework their lineup? Does Bichette just end up as the DH? It looks like maybe they've been trying him a little bit of work, practice a little work at second base from what I saw. And he hasn't played a lot of that in his entirety of his career, including the minors. So what would the lineup look like and what's most comfortable probably for the Blue Jays if Bichette is officially good to go?
Yeah, the two things in play are, is the need good enough to play the field and run the bases? And, from all indications, yes. So if that's the case, he is in the middle of your defense on the infield. Does that mean that Andrés Giménez stays at shortstop because he's filled in admirably there and you move Bo to second for this playoff run? Probably. You've got the second best hitter in terms of most hits in baseball in Bo Bichette. So if he's healthy enough, he's on the 26-man roster. There's no question about it at this point. And then I don't think you see him at DH unless he can't play the field, because remember, George Springer has served as the DH all playoff long. The outfield has basically been Dalton Varsho in center with Addison Barger, Nathan Lucas, Miles Straw, the three that rotate the corner outfield positions, David Schneider a little bit as well. And remember, you have to take somebody off the roster in order to add Bo Bichette back. I'm not saying you don't do that for Bo Bichette. You do. But does somebody come off the roster of that would be an corner outfield position and open up a spot for Bichette as well? So if he's good to go. And the other thing that does, it's something I talked to you and Joe Kelly about, Derek, going into the playoff for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He didn't have that protection of Bo Bichette. Would he be able to perform? Because the entire team had struggled in the three playoff series that they had pretty much the group had been in the past. Well, Vladdy answered that question resoundingly, but do you now get that protection once again, or does Vladdy provide the protection for Bo Bichette now? And does that move Nathan Lucas down to the back of the batting order, who's been so strong? So there's a lot of moving parts for John Schneider, not only where defensively Bo Bichette is in the field, but where do you slot the other players in that have been such an important piece of what this Blue Jays playoff run has been, and Nathan Lucas, Ernie Clement, Addison Barger. They've had the big hits at the big times when they've needed them. And how do you change that batting order to make it as complete as possible?
And speaking of the batting order, one of the kind of fun stories here locally is somewhat of a local kid, Ernie Clement from Rochester. He's only behind Guerrero in postseason OPS at over 1,000. He's been wonderful for them, Pat. But what was his season like leading up to this? I feel like I hadn't heard about him until the postseason started.
Yeah, Ernie Clement is a great story. And for folks that don't know, you're right. He's a Brighton, New York product, so just a suburb of Rochester. He was released by the Oakland Athletics in spring training in 2023, late in spring, actually. And there was a lot of familiarity. Clement was originally drafted by the Cleveland organization, Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins coming from there, obviously. So they knew Ernie Clement quite well, a little bit. So Ernie Clement signs as a free agent on a minor league deal, joins the Bisons in 23, and really was a catalyst to what the team did on the field and off the field. He's has such a presence about himself. He's young, but he's old in terms of baseball age and having played the game for quite a while now. He went to the University of Virginia, a very cerebral and heady player. So he's smart. He knows the game. He has great instincts and can play all over the diamond. He's been a third baseman. He's been your second baseman if you're John Schneider. If you ask him to play any of the infield positions, he'll do it. He never played first base, but I'm sure he'd pick up a first baseman's glove and give you everything he had. So he's one of those guys that he's been a glue guy, and he's been exactly what Toronto has needed. And there's a lot of players like that on the roster, and that's another aspect of why this makes it so fun. This is not a team, a Cinderella story of a team on a low budget. That is not the case. You've got two teams that have spent a lot of money. The Dodgers certainly a lot more high profile in terms of the money they've spent. Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s $500 million contract doesn't kick in until next year, but you still have a lot of money spent on the Blue Jays side. But you've had a lot of these good stories, like an Ernie Clement for the obvious connection. His batting, his walk-up song is the Isley Brothers shout song. I know on the video board here in Toronto, one of Ernie Clement's nicknames is Earn Dog, and they've got the kind of Zubas type font behind his nickname. So he totally leans into the Buffalo Bills connection and is such a big Bills fan. So that's, such a part of this story as well of Buffalo and Toronto becoming such good sports partners over the last 6-7 years where, look, if you're a Bills fan, you were worried about Toronto taking the Bills a dozen, 15 years ago, and a lot of the bad blood, so to speak, and kind of the, you can't take our team's mentality, but that's completely gone away. And to see whether it's the Bison's connection to the Blue Jays being their affiliate, the Josh Allen going up to Toronto and taking batting practice and becoming friends with some of the Blue Jay players, I think that's a part of the story of why, again, if you're looking for who to root for and why, just another reason why to give the Blue Jays a chance in this World Series.
All right. Pat Malacaro here on the Western Hotline, the voice of the Buffalo Bisons. Pat, thank you so much for jumping on with us. Enjoy this experience. I know you got a packed day today with Media Day and then game one tomorrow. It should be a blast.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate the time.
Again, that was Pat Malacario there on the Western Hotline, the voice of the Buffalo Bisons.
Anything you need, sights and sounds of Media Day or anything within Toronto for the World Series, follow at PatWGR. Pat will have you taken care of and ready to go. Don't forget, though, that October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. It takes only 30 minutes once a year to get a potentially life-saving screening. Schedule your mammogram today at Roswell Park with two convenient locations in Buffalo and Williamsville. Visit roswellpark.org/mammography for a quick appointment. Come back, wrap up hour number one. Rick, you're on hold patiently through that segment. We'll get you on the other side here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones here with you on a pretty chill Thursday on WGR.
Tailgate Trivia is back. It is presented by Total Sports Enterprise Buffalo. Listen during every Bills game for your chance to call in, answer the trivia question, and win autographed Bills merch. It is courtesy of TSE Buffalo. 803-0550, the number to call. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on a Thursday edition of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Talking Sabres, talking Blue Jays. We'll talk Bills.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Here in just a moment.
You know what's funny? Dan played the song there from Blink-182. Give me one good reason.
Right.
The Sabres.
Sabres are doing that a little bit.
Give me one good reason for fans to start flocking back.
They're doing that. And we'll get to the phones here to talk to Sabres. Rick joins the show. Rick, how we doing, man?
Doing good. How are you guys doing this morning?
Doing well.
So I go back to the beginning of the show when you said that fans are just ready to get hurt again. I'm on the other side of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. I refuse to let myself get hurt.
Fair.
That's
I've
very
seen
fair.
It before. They've done this before, you know. It's still really early in the season. And, you know, I need to see results. And by that, I mean I need to see them break this drought. I want to see these guys get a taste of playoff hockey in Buffalo. If they get that taste, then they'll know how important it is to play hard every game and get to the playoffs. If they can break this drought, I don't care if they get swept. Mm-hmm. They'll have that taste.
Yes.
And then I can get hurt.
Rick, real quick.
That's the way I feel about it.
Rick, while we got you here, I do want to ask, like, are you at least keeping a wandering eye on them right now, or what's it going to take for you to get invested? Like, where's the benchmark for you in this season that I think that you'd be willing to be like, okay, maybe are they actually, like, are they spicy enough that I can pay more attention?
Well, I'm watching every game,
okay.
I'll be honest.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
I'm not completely ignoring
in.
Them.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop, so to speak.
Cause
it's
That's very fair.
Every season for the past 14 years.
As you said.
I pay attention. I watch. I listen to WGR for the Sabres news. You know, I'm totally tuned into the Sabres. It's just, I don't allow myself to get too excited. I don't allow myself to get disappointed if they lose, because that's what I expect. Because I've expected it for the last 14 years.
Right.
But if they can actually get to the playoffs, break this drought, then I can allow myself to get fully invested and allow the emotions to carry me through. That's Rick, the way I feel about that.
Rick, appreciate the call, and thank you for the little back and forth there. Because I am interested when people say, like, I'm not ready to fully buy into this sort of thing, or like, I'm, or to lesser extents, because Rick is watching all the games still. He does have
but his eye looking at them. The emotional hedge is not there yet.
The emotional hedge is not there. And I understand that one. I do wonder about the lesser version of that. The person who has been so turned off by them that maybe now they're starting to look over here or not.
Rather
and
than
what's
like,
it going to take for them to start watching them again, let alone the emotional investment that someone that, like Rick, is still watching every game. He's not getting too high. He's not getting too low, because he knows the medium that he has to be at to watch them.
Yeah, there are all those fans out there that
there are
it's just checking the phone in the morning going, oh, they won again.
And that's the
thing. Or they lost. What, you know, what have you.
Can the Sabres get those fans back?
Mm-hmm.
That's the task this year.
Now, it is important to bring up, you know, the other shoe to drop. We mentioned last year a few times. When the losing streak begins, they're 11-9-1.
They are third in the Atlantic, as a matter of fact, threatening for second.
Mm-hmm. And then they go on the lengthy losing streak. It all starts with
13.
That 1-0 loss to Minnesota, a very frustrating loss.
A frustrating loss where they do play well, actually. UPL is just outdueled in that game by Gustafson, and it was a great game. It was a game that you'd be like, okay, yeah, you lose that one. The next one's Vancouver, where they steal a point where they have no business getting one.
Yep.
And you're like, okay, so you've lost two games, but you look okay. Then Colorado happened.
And it's the thing, like, and I know Paul's brought this up too. The Colorado loss, where you're up 4-0 in the first and you lose 5-4 in regulation. I think for a lot of people, like, that's when the season felt over, and it's December 3rd. But we were all waiting for the other shoe to drop. And to be fair, I'm kind of with the caller too. Like, I'm having fun. I'm enjoying it. I'm also kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like,
yeah,
a part of me is sitting here going, cool, the top player, like, and I'm happy with the depth scoring, but a part of me sitting here with the top end guys not playing well, I'm like waiting for, and Tage has his worst year in years, and he has like 25 goals.
You're basically Wile E. Coyote. You purchase something from Acme.
Yeah.
And you're waiting for the bomb to blow up in your face instead of finally getting the Roadrunner. Don't forget to enter at WGR550.com for your chance to win a free home heating system courtesy of T-Mark Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Whether your home needs a furnace, boiler, or ductless heat pump, T-Mark's got you covered. Last day to enter is October 26th of 2025. That's just 3 days away, people. Get it going. Hour number two coming up on the other side here. We switch over to football. with the Bills. Sal Capaccio joining us. Coming up next here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Good to have all three of those guys. We'll get their first real practice today. You know, so again, managing expectations, let's get them integrated and get them rolling here. There's a certainly a conditioning piece. There's a physical piece to it as well. And then there's a schematic piece to it also. So just trying to manage expectations and just take it one step at a time right now, one day at a time.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott from yesterday as the Bills got back to work. It was media day yesterday. We got our first official injury reports. And on that, three players did not practice. Daquan Jones, Josh Palmer, and Taylor Rapp. But with that, to what McDermott was saying there, Harrison was limited, Hoyt full, Larry Ogunjobi full. And four more on the Bills. We go to the Western Hotline. Sal Capaccio does join the show. Sal, good morning. How are we doing?
Good, guys. Good morning to you as well.
So right off the bat for the Bills, the story I think everyone's going to be keeping an eye on now is Maxwell Harrison. He was limited yesterday. What did you see, Sal, from the limited time the media gets to see practice from him? I know some of the videos were very encouraging, at least to me.
Yeah, for sure. For me, too. I think the explosiveness, change of direction, fluidity, it was all there. You saw it on full display. This is the player that was the fastest player at the combine and a big reason why the Bills drafted him, you know, to add speed and explosion into the secondary. Obviously, unfortunately, he has the sprained knee in training camp, so he wasn't able to participate anymore after that. But I think going out there and watching him yesterday, even through knowing that he had been rehabbing, he had the brace on, we had seen him for a couple of weeks out there with a trainer, I was really encouraged. I was really impressed. So, all signs pointing up, I guess, arrow up for the way Max Harrison looked at practice yesterday.
And his speed, too, Sal, it looks very effortless. Like, I mean, that was the big thing of when they drafted him was, you know, it's late in the first round, and you're getting a guy with an A-plus trait. It was his speed. He's a little bit smaller than maybe you'd want. He's coming from Kentucky, right? It's not that premier program or what have you. But in those videos I saw yesterday from both you and your colleagues, man, his speed is effortless.
Yeah, that's right. And, you would think because of the injury, because the brace and all of that, and we couldn't tell for sure. I think he was still wearing a brace underneath. He had pants on, sweats on. I think he still had a brace underneath. But you'd think there'd be a bit of hitch there. I didn't see it. And I want to stop myself even short of going, oh, can he play this week, next week? And I think that might be a little too early, a little ambitious, a little bit, putting the cart before the horse. We'll see, though. We'll see what the Bills' plan is for him. But I thought he looked really good. And, of course, the mental part of it, the reps, being on the field, knowing the defense, understanding, you know, where to be, when to be there. That's got to come as well before the Bills are comfortable putting him on the field.
Mm-hmm. Sal, then I did want to, before I forget, another question in the secondary. Taylor Rapp did not practice yesterday, a knee injury. Remind me if I'm wrong. It sounded like yesterday McDermott was mentioning that he's been dealing with this since, you know, before the season started. That could maybe point to some of the issues he's had this year on the field.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it is something that McDermott said he'd been dealing with for some time now, since before the season started. And I will point out that on Monday night in the game against the Atlanta Falcons, towards the end of the game, he did come out briefly. And I don't recall if he finished that last series on defense, but I remember he did come out, but it was towards the end of the game, so we didn't have an official injury report on him. So that could have been knee-related as well. Also, Sean McDermott kind of didn't really know at yesterday's time if it would be more of a week-to-week or day-to-day type thing. They're still evaluating it. But obviously, it does not sound like Taylor Rapp's in a position right now to be able to be counted on and to be available on Sunday. So what happens there is you're probably looking at Jordan Poyer once again coming in as he was elevated last week. He's still on the practice squad. They have to either elevate him or sign him to the 53. They do have an open roster spot on the 53, but you might need that at defensive tackle because Zion Logue has no elevations left, and they're down to three healthy defensive tackles, even with Larry Ogunjobi coming back, because Daquan Jones is out, obviously, right now.
Sticking on the injuries here, Sal, of course, that's brought to you by the Barnstrom Injured for Help call, 1-800-8-MILLION. You mentioned it. Daquan Jones also has a DNP on there. Josh Palmer did not practice as well after he suffered that injury in the Atlanta game early on, and it looks like he has not taken part in any snaps Wednesday either.
Right. So now the Bills, you know, will look to the other five wide receivers at this point on the roster because they have six, and they traditionally go with five or six. It has been both. Sometimes it's six. Sometimes it's five with either Curtis Samuel or Elijah Moore inactive. It is important to point out that Curtis Samuel is still on the injury list with his ribs injury. He did practice yesterday, though, in a limited capacity, so that's good. So if you don't have Joshua Palmer, and the way it sounds from Sean McDermott, you're not going to have him because he's called him week to week, and he didn't even rule out Palmer or Daquan Jones going on IR eventually, so we'll see where that goes. And that means that, obviously, the other five wide receivers you'd still have available for you would be Khalil Shakir, Keon Coleman, Curtis Samuel, if he can go, Elijah Moore and Tyrell Shavers, and then you do have Christian Wilkerson and Steven Gosnell on the practice squad.
Going now to some of the full participants. The cavalry has somewhat arrived for the Bills defense now with Michael Hoyt and Larry Ogunjobi. I know both spoke with the media. I did see one clip from Hoyt mentioning that for the first time in a little while, he got to be a football fan and was, you know, yelling at his TV, the whole thing, but he's ready to go. And yeah, I mean, Sal, I think you even mentioned it yesterday with us that it's sort of like kind of like almost like a new season because we're getting so many players back that you just haven't heard from or seen in so many weeks.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, three defenders, two of them should play. I can't see Ogunjobi or Hoyt not playing this week. I think that's going to happen. They're going to play. I don't know about Max Harrison. I don't think he'll play this week. You never know. We'll see where it goes with him, but probably not him. But Ogunjobi has to play. I mean, even with him added, and you only have, like I said, three healthy defensive linemen, Ed Oliver, Deion Walker, and him, you could still elevate Jordan Phillips again. Zion Logue, like I said, would have to be signed. Fedarian Mathis can be elevated, but that's it, guys. So they need Larry Ogunjobi to play. They need him to play meaningful snaps, actually, this weekend. Yeah. He's got to be a healthy part of that rotation. So that would give you four defensive tackles, and then counting somebody they bring up from the practice squad. And then you have six defensive ends right now when you add Michael Hoyt in. Now, Michael Hoyt's a bit of a different kind of defensive end. He can play around different parts of the line of scrimmage. You can kick him inside. He can stand up. He can play strong side linebacker if you'd like. He can drop in coverage. So he's kind of a little bit of a chess piece that you can move around the board a little bit. He can play in different situations. And I think that's really, honestly, the reason why the Bills even signed him in the first place, to have those options. But I can see him playing right away. People have to remember, unlike Max Harrison coming off the injury, right, these guys are coming off a suspension list, and they've been able to work out on their own and then even work out with the Bills for the last 3 weeks. They've been at the facility for the last 3 weeks. They just couldn't practice with their team. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's different to integrate. And I think a lot, I'd say, smoother and easier to be able to integrate. They did have a lot of reps in preseason and training camp because the team knew this was going to happen.
Curious guys to watch for on Sunday against Carolina, how much they're really going to go. And so, I mean, we listened to the clip from McDermott kind of mentioning, you know, the integration and maybe tempering a little bit of expectation. As you mentioned, they don't have a whole lot of healthy D tackles. Ogunjobi's going to have to play meaningful snaps. So it'll be curious to see how they do deploy both of those guys.
Yeah, and obviously you're going against a really, really good run offense again in the Carolina Panthers. So they need to be better against the run. And I think these guys can help them against the run. Larry Ogunjobi, his anchor, I mean, his legs, oh my God, they're like tree trunks, right? They're huge. And he's an anchor. And he's a guy that can kind of help out in the run game right there. But, you know, he's a guy that's going to have to be able to, you know, mix in with Deion Walker, with Ed Oliver. And then, of course, you bring in Michael Hoyt as well. And he's a guy that's going to have to be also stout in the run game. But you're going to ask him to do a few different things, obviously, and to get after the passer in those situations as well.
Panthers injury report looks a little enviable in a lot of ways, except for, you know, the starting quarterback. Bryce Young, the only player to miss practice for injury-related reasons. Sal, when it comes to it, we talked about it already, that it might even be kind of scarier to see Andy Dalton in the lineup instead of Bryce Young. Young considered day-to-day by head coach Dave Canales.
Yeah, interesting yesterday that Bryce Young did go out to practice out on the field. He didn't have a boot on. The reporters who were out there said there was no significant type of limp, but he also didn't practice at all, right? So what does that tell me? They're putting him out there just to get some reps throwing the ball, maybe off to the side, working with trainers, but he's probably not, you know, on track to play on Sunday. It's a non-conference game for them. Obviously, they'd love to have their young quarterback, but they have a stable veteran back there, a guy that's seen everything in this league. And when you bring in a team like the Buffalo Bills coming off a bye who would have a plan to say, okay, we're going to get after this young quarterback and show him some things he hasn't seen, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to have Andy Dalton back there who can kind of stabilize things, settle things down. And I would say from my perspective, I think that the Bills, to me, would have a would rather face Bryce Young. Like, that's my opinion. I'd rather see the Bills face Bryce Young as far as chances to win. Now, that said, Bryce Young is more mobile, and mobile quarterbacks have hurt the Bills this year, right? Andy Dalton, he's a guy, though, that's seen every defense in this league. He's seen the Bills defense multiple times. He knows where to put the ball. He knows where to go with it. He does have a young wide receiver core that he'll be working with. But last year, when Andy Dalton was inserted, the first game he played when he went in for Bryce Young, he threw over 300 yards against the Raiders. Like, yeah. Bam, see ya. Like, it's like he comes in and he gives you a spark right there. So I expect that to be something for them. But, guys, I mean, at the end of the day, you can't lose to Andy Dalton, right? You can't lose to Andy Dalton.
Cannot.
And the Bills, this game isn't about Andy Dalton or Bryce Young, really. This game is about stopping Rico Dowdell and Chuba Hubbard and about scoring on your offensive side.
Sal, on that, I mean, you mentioned you can't lose to Andy Dalton. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, me and Derek, right at the top of the show. Like, yes, it's an out-of-conference game. Yes, it's the Carolina Panthers. But it does feel very important. They've never really lost three straight in this run here. McDermott's 8-0 off the bye in his coaching career. And there, I think there's a wavering patience for Bills fans with this era, with this coaching staff, with really this whole regime. And if all of a sudden the wheels seemingly start to fall off, and again, it's only they'd be 4-3, they're still in a solid position. But this game does feel like it has some level of magnitude for a Sunday non-conference 1 p.m. game.
I agree with you 100%. You know, the Bills over the last several years, I think it's 6 years, Sal Majorana asked this to Sean McDermott. I think each year over the last 6 years, they've lost two straight at some point.
Yeah.
And as you said, knock on wood, they've never lost three straight. The difference has basically been, though, there hasn't been a challenger in the AFC East to have to pass them and then them have to catch up. Now, the 1 year, remember, The Patriots came to Buffalo in the windy Monday night game, and the Patriots were ahead of the Bills in the standings at that point, right? After that, the Bills eventually caught up. There was another year where the Dolphins were ahead of the Bills, and they kind of collapsed in December. But the Patriots have a schedule here that's going to lend themselves to keep winning games. And if the Bills drop another one, and they've already dropped head-to-head to the Patriots, now suddenly you are talking about not only can you win the division, you're talking about are they a team that's going to make the playoffs? And I know that sounds a bit hyperbolic, but it's not. I mean, you can't go to 4-3 here with the Kansas City Chiefs on the horizon in a week.
Absolutely. And, I wonder, too, Sal, how much watching Drake May play and him kind of do something we've yet to see Tua Tagovailoa do. Like, Tua was the secondary to Josh Allen for all these years, and we've seen the Bills just kind of, you know, brush them aside. May comes in his second year and maybe already looks more impressive with, I would say, definitely worse weapons outside of Stephon Diggs. He's very good, but Hill in his prime, Waddle, Achan. I mean, that offense was loaded for those few years. And May already comes in and in many aspects is a top 10 quarterback. I mean, last week it's against Tennessee, but he completes 91% of his passes or 90% of his passes. Tom Brady didn't even do that. And just, you know, I know we all don't like him, but if you can do something for the New England Patriots that Tom Brady did not do, I think it is somewhat cause for concern for opposing fans.
No doubt. Now, look, they're facing a really good Cleveland Browns defense this
weekend. Yes, they are.
Right? And that's going to be a challenge. But, man, I just – the Browns, how can they score? Right? I mean, I can't imagine the Browns putting up enough points. This will probably be a low-scoring game. The Browns will do a decent job against – you know, if Drake May and the New England offense goes out there and just lights up the Cleveland Browns, then you're like, woof. I mean, take notice right there, right? But at the same time, even if they don't, I just don't know if the Browns can score. The Browns right now, despite how – you know, poor they are as a team and how they look. Now, they did beat the Green Bay Packers and they did beat the Miami Dolphins. Let's remember that. And I know Miami's not that great, but, you know, I want to at least throw that out there. They are in their rankings, total yards given up per game, first in the league at only 256. Rushing yards per game, 82, fourth in the league. Passing yards per game, third at 173. So I think the Browns have a fighting chance if they can turn the ball turn the Patriots over a couple of times and get some short fields and make some points. But at the same time, I just don't think they can score enough points against the Patriots, even if keeping it a low-scoring game against that offense.
Right. We do get the week underway tonight with Thursday Night Football. Mm-hmm. Carson Wentz, by the way, getting another start in Minnesota. Sal, I've been one to say it. I'm a J.J. McCarthy truther. I kind of fell for him during that draft process. He had like one good quarter of football against Chicago, and that was kind of about it. But I'm about done with Carson Wentz. As a neutral fan, I'm about done watching him play.
Yeah, but I'm not sure what they have in J.J. McCarthy
either. No idea. But they've got to find out soon, right?
C- can we remember that last year they had Sam Darnold and Daniel Jones on their roster?
I'm so glad you brought that up. We need to talk about Kevin O'Connell being a QB whisperer, because Daniel Jones spent 6 months in Minneapolis. He goes to Indianapolis, and he's a man reborn.
Yeah, I don't know what the dynamics were behind the scenes of why, you know, what the contract situation and all those that could play into it, but they had Daniel Jones in their building. And look what he's doing right now in Indy. And they had Sam Darnold in their building, and obviously he was very good for them, but at the way the season ended, probably left a sour taste in everybody's mouth.
Oh, yeah.
But now look what's happening in Seattle with him. And then, of course, J.J. McCarthy just does not look like he's ready yet for the NFL in a big role. Interesting game tonight, though, because I think this a lot about the AFC West. Even when I was watching the Broncos-Giants this weekend, and now you have the Chargers playing the Vikings tonight. Mm-hmm. You could look at it one of two ways from a Bills perspective and a Bills fans perspective, which is, do you want the Vikings to beat the Chargers and give another NFC team an AFC loss, right? That would be the normal thing you root for all the time, which is all AFC teams just lose to NFC teams because that's less chances for that team to catch the Bills. Mm-hmm. Or do you want the Chargers to win and remain a game up on the Chiefs because they already have a head-to-head and they would be 5-3? And the Chiefs right now aren't even in a playoff spot. Like, is that something you root for? I think it's a tough call.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for tonight, too, the Chargers started the year off hot. They lose both their tackles, Rashawn Slater before the year, Joe Alt during the year. And that luster has worn off for them very, very quickly. I think they'll beat Minnesota tonight. But they went from that feeling of, hey, there's your AFC West contender, to very quickly they're 4-3 and sitting in a situation where it could all kind of fall apart for them. Sal, before we let you go here, the schedule for today, and then, of course, tomorrow, you'll be in these chairs, got Sean McDermott and such, leading into Sunday.
Yeah, guys, so today the Bills will be back on the practice field 12:25 p.m. They'll have practice today. We'll talk with players again. We'll see how things go with injuries. We'll take a look. And, you know, we didn't talk too much today, and we can talk a little bit more tomorrow about Terrell Bernard and Matt Milano and how they've looked throughout the week, how they progressed. Dalton Kincaid, those are guys that were also limited but practicing. So we'll see a little bit more about them. And then tomorrow, Sean McDermott joins me for his weekly radio interview. And got a couple other things along the way as well tomorrow on a Buffalo Football Friday.
Sounds good, sir. Enjoy the rest of your day. We will talk again soon.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Sal.
Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. By the way, already the first name I've sent to Sal as potentially a new Syracuse quarterback. Braden Fowler Niklausi, I believe is how you pronounce his name. Colorado State quarterback. Hit the transfer portal yesterday. I don't know if he's any good. I don't think he is, but he had a lot of hype two years ago.
I love that it took you less than 24 hours to back up your word.
Always ready. Always ready for a fight. I'm always ready. Again, no idea if he's any good. I've watched him play two games, and neither one was I impressed. But he hit the portal yesterday because their coach, Jay Norvell, was fired a few weeks ago.
Well, I'm going to intercept what you're doing here, just like how we can make sure to help you let TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence help intercept your heating bills. Enter at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 toward your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. The contest ends on January 4th of 2026. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence, powering tomorrow, comforting today. I do wonder, like, at some point when it comes to how this Bills season has been going, by the way, like, I feel like this week for me, it's been a little mundane.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Bills themselves, we just need to see them on the field again.
Yep. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
It's been a long bye week.
It's been a very long
bye week. A long bye week. And that'll always happen when you have a loss. But it also has not helped, I guess, in my case, that the hockey team has looked interesting in that time off.
No, I mean, like, to be fair,
someone would tell me, like, yeah. There are six games. There's six Sabres games between the next Bills game. Just to help you with the bitter taste in your mouth on that, I saw that as a threat.
Yeah, it really did depend on who said it to you, if it was a threat or not.
Well, they were also 0-3 at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And did not look competitive in the slightest.
No.
All of a sudden, through four of those six games in between the last time that the Bills have played, they've looked good.
Yeah,
it's been so fun. Thank you, Sabres, for making my time away from the Bills actually relatively enjoyable.
Palatable. I mean, really. Like, I've enjoyed it. Because initially when it was, you're going to have this week four Sabres games before the next Bills game, I was like, this could get painful fast. Instead, it's been pretty good. And we're only through two of them, and Friday and Saturday could be rough. But at least it's the weekend. I'll deal with it.
And we'll read plenty of your tweets coming up on the other side here as well, because a lot of you have really wanted to get involved with that conversation today. I, however, want to mention something from last night. Calgary. The Saddle Dome. The lights.
Yeah, lights were out.
Half on. And it reminded me, for those that know, you know what I'm about to say, okay? If you get it, you get it. If you don't, you don't. This joke is going to probably clear a lot of you, and I understand that. But that reminded me of 11 o'clock games at Hockey Outlet, okay?
Just sounds cheap. I'm sorry.
No, it, like.
Yeah?
Yeah. If you know, you know.
They were trying to get the lights going, and eventually they're like, screw it, we're playing. Just
yeah,
go. Just
they
go.
Kept going. But yeah, oh, no, bad, that's just like one of those, that's a barley game at Hockey Outlet, baby. Let's go.
803.
Fun time all around.
803-0550, the number to call. We'll read your tweets and your calls as well when we come back. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here in the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. This is WGR.
Left side of the ice where the Sabres had three skaters. Now they'll play it to the right wing on entry. Right up the middle, a chance for Kozak to the net. He scores. Kozak with goals in back-to-back games, and the Sabres have the lead at 2-1.
Dan Dunleavy there on the call. One of the four goals for the Buffalo Sabres last night, Tyson Kozak.
Matter of fact,
one of two assists from Jack Quinn.
Matter of fact, one of the only ways you would have heard Dan Dunleavy.
Yes, it was a TNT broadcast. TNT HBO broadcast.
HBO broadcast. And guess what? Tomorrow night is an ESPN Plus game.
Yeah. Tough run here. Saturday, though, is back on MSG.
Yes.
But a tough run here.
I'm not certain. Is Friday still also MSG, or is it just that it's ESPN Plus? We're going to look at the schedule real quick.
As you're getting that, though, I'll inform the audience.
It is ESPN Plus, Hulu, Disney Plus. Well, hang on. It says that for all of them, or for a lot of them. So let me get that. Give me a second.
As you're checking that, ready to take your game day to the next level? Enter online now at WGR550.com for your chance to win a $300 tailgate tray certificate from Alibaba Kebab to feed 12 football fans. Each Friday, a winner is going to be announced during Football Friday with Shope and the Bulldog. Fire up your taste buds at any of their three locations. Do we have the answer? Is it just ESPN Plus? Plus all of the other streaming services? Maybe. Yes. No. Potentially.
Give me a second.
I mean, well, it would make sense. It was a 7:30 game. The 7:30 games are typically the quote-unquote national broadcasts.
They typically are.
Yeah. So that would make sense. It's just kind of unfair that we had three in a week. Personally, for me, I hate it.
Yes. It is ESPN Plus. It is a non-MSG game, it looks like, for this one.
Mm. Saturday, though, back to normal.
Back to normal.
And at 5.
Yes. You know what's funny, though? The TNT broadcast twice got that wrong about tomorrow's game.
I know.
They had it still listed at 7:30.
I only saw the one.
It came back the second time, and I'm like, they did it again.
That's bad. It's bad luck. They gave you hours in advance to change it.
Yeah.
Hours in advance. We weren't even on air, and we knew. So
not bad.
Hours in advance, all day.
Not great.
803-0550, the number to call. We've been talking a lot of the Sabres today. They have won three of their last four. They're still under 500, but playing very, very good hockey in an Atlantic division that seems ripe for the picking. There's only two teams, actually, I believe, that have a positive goal differential. No, the Sabres are not one of them. They did play one of them, though, last night in Detroit, and then Montreal, I believe, is the other. But wanted to get your thoughts on where you sit with this team. Are you tuned in? Are you locked in with them? Or, like, we took the call a little while ago. Rick,
yes.
Was a little more apprehensive watching the games, but not fully bought in. The emotional hedge is not there yet. I can understand that. I mentioned it. I'm watching them. I'm enjoying them. I'm happy to talk about them. That does not mean I am fully bought in on I'm looking at who could be trade deadline acquisitions and I'm starting to like dream about playoffs and partying the plot. Not there yet, obviously. Again, they're under 500. They could have a very good weekend here against Toronto. They could also lose both of them and be 3-6 and we're all going, cool, okay.
That week in October was fun.
So, and that's going to be true for a little while here with the season starting. They will go through low periods. They'll also probably be hot periods as well. The key here is to not lose 13 to 15 straight, where it's just like, cool, the season is over. That has been their biggest problem for years. You can complain all you want, and I do too, about the moves they make, the lack thereof, what have you. It has been the lengthy losing streaks that have taken them out of seasons entirely.
So now we talked about this a little bit on Tuesday about, like, you know, what if they, you know, drop three or four instead? And I want to still try to represent the other side of that.
Mm-hmm.
I still want to be the representation of this because I am the worst of your impulses. I'm a bad influence on you, and that is my fault. I know what I am.
Mm-hmm. You do.
I'm still never forgiven for 2018.
No.
When I got you super excited for the season and then they laid a massive egg. So I'm going to stay with it. Again, learning no lessons here. It is about the context to me. It is how they are looking. And if they want to keep playing like this, even with all the injuries that have been happening, and especially with the fact that the top performers are not playing like that right now, your leading scorers with 6 points each are Benson, Quinn, and Doan. The only one that maybe you would have thought spicy enough about to be leading the team in points right away is Benson.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
And yeah, it was going to be more dependent on who you are.
Yes.
If you thought that he had points in him. And rather than just being a smart, good
hockey player. There were a lot of underlying numbers telling people that Zach Benson is a good player. And this is the opportunity for them to see that out of him. I look at this team and I'm genuinely curious as to what they are. Paul Hamilton said it great last night on postgame. And I have to agree with him on this. Like, the hate with the, like, I don't know about the word hate, but like the criticism of Kevyn Adams. Will it require some walking back if things are playing out the way that they are? And I'm guilty of it. I know that I am. And I'm willing to, like, here's the thing about the Sabres fan base. It can be incredibly forgiving if you give them an entertaining and good season. One that would also require a playoff berth, but there are enough people that want to at least be invested enough to watch them. We have Rick calling us saying, like, I've been betrayed for 14 years. I'm still watching them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of people in this in the Twitter conversation, you know, excited about this thing. Zach Ben Zizen, I think he's saying like Ben Season or something. Okay. I don't know. Or Ben Zin. Eat, sleep, breathe this team. And yeah, that's kind of what some people have here. Josh at Sashi Man 1 saying, yes, hockey talk. Excited to be able to talk hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Christopher tweeting in, yes, very tuned in. All I want is a solid effort, win or lose. Okay, not win or lose, just win.
Mm-hmm.
Rob, always tuned in. Robert, God, I hope it continues. Jeff, sweep the Leafs and I'll be pulled back in. And if you sweep the Leafs, you mention it. You mentioned the other side of the coin. You lose the Leafs, suddenly you're looking at 3-6.
Right.
Beat the Leafs twice, 5-4, and you've been very much looking like a competent, consistent hockey team. Something that you haven't seen out of the Sabres for a good amount of time. I think that this still needs to be a waited out until the 15-game part of the season to see where they really are. But the context of how is going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
How is it getting done? Are you playing like this every night? Are you able to overcome some of the deficiencies that have been happening? And then, if you're playing hard like this every night, and you're getting your top performers back into the score sheet, things can get real nasty real quick. I want to be optimistic mostly because it's something different. I have begged this team this year, you have one job for me. I do not necessarily care if you are good. I do care that you are different. And here we are, 7 games into the season. It's a small sample size. But you want to talk about different? They look different than the team that played the first 3 games.
That is very true. Like, and that's where, let's, for argument's sake, they sweep the Leafs. They're 5-4. In reality, we'd all be talking about it in a positive, because it would be 5-1 in their last 6. It would be, okay, yeah, you start off poorly, but you dealt with the Norris injury and power was out and you were kind of trying to figure everything out.
Kesselring's out.
Kesselring is still out. You figured it out and now you're off to the races. And it's not all perfect. As we've mentioned a lot, the top guys are not performing to the level that you'd want, but the depth is. There are still some underlying issues with them, but if you can be 5-1 with all these injuries in your last 6 and start to really stack those wins as well, that's where they're going to get into a good spot. They don't let the Montreal loss from earlier this week compound into another one. Again, they got after Detroit early. And they did so, I think, in a lot of aspects because they knew they had a goalie who was making his first career start, and we're going to make sure his life's not a living hell. We're going to make sure we can get out of this in a good spot. And so they just went after Detroit. They pick up two quick power plays. They don't score on either, but it's a lot of quality chances. John Gibson has to stand on his head at times. They've looked very, very good really since the three-game losing streak to start the year. And that's the positive, is that since the bad start, it's been a good ride, and it isn't necessarily just because a bunch of guys came back. Hell, you don't have Josh Norris, and you won't for a few weeks here. And you're still able to perform very well.
And just as importantly about that is they did it also to the defending cup champions. Yes, mm-hmm. without Barkov and without Matthew Tkachuk. However, Bobrovsky is no Bush League player in the net. The guy's a Vezina winner. Defending cup champion. They still have Reinhart, Bennett, Rodriguez, Marchand, all spread them out. You shut them out. And it didn't even look like they were threatening for a long time in that game. You took it to task against a physical team that is willing to bring the lumber. Jacob Bryson gets concussed early in that game. And the Sabres decide, no, we're going to play nasty with you. Brad Marchand has a kind of valid crash out because Dahlin cross-checks him in the back, then tries to hit him again. Plays a little bit of like a nice, finds the way to get away with a little bit of that rat-like tendency sort of thing against the NHL's biggest rat. Gets Marchand to crash out. Should have got it. Honestly, I would have given him a tenner for ripping a helmet apart like that.
I was a little surprised. But he didn't get more.
But hey, NHL officiating and questionable calls. Tale as old as time.
Right.
And then, again, Montreal. It's not like you lost that game the same way you lost the first three. You mentioned it. If you were a neutral hockey fan, that was an enjoyable game to watch. It's just a shame you didn't get a point out of it. That said, you're not going to be perfect at every opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And like how Lindy Ruff says, you mentioned it. How do you respond to a loss? I'd say a 4-2 game where you dominate possession for a majority of the contest is a really good response.
803-0550, the number two call. We go to Tony up next. Tony, how we doing?
Doing good, guys. I'm enjoying the early part of this season. I think a lot of the intangible stuff seems to be on the upswing. Mm-hmm. I think it'll get better defensively with Kesselring, and I think they're buying into to defense. But, you know, even if it's just until you get back Norris, and that's obviously, you know, very up in the air when that's going to be and what he's going to be like when he comes back, I just don't see this being sustainable as weak up the middle as we are. I mean, you got McLeod kind of – I could deal with McLeod as a second-line guy if it weren't for the fact that, you know, my 1C is completely unproven and I've got nothing at three unless you believe that, you know, Oslin is going to fill it and stay there. I'm just so nervous up the middle of the ice in terms of their ability to, you know, for the other stuff to matter, because it's just so weak. It's got to be 32 or 32. If you look at the four centers every team is rolling out on a night-to-night basis, all due respect, this has to be the 32nd ranked group of centers in the league right now.
Boston might have a run for that money, even with healthy. But Tony, but
Tony's got an argument there.
He's got an argument, but I'm fighting for 31. So you still have the overall point. You are correct about that. The difference is that the Sabres lost their 1C to injury, whereas Boston is willingly trotting out a roster that has, what, Pavel Zacha as their starting center?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know, man. Here's their list of centers. Zacha, Mittelstadt, Elias Lindholm, Sean Corrali, Morgan Geekie.
Mm-hmm.
I
actually don't hate Morgan Geekie, though, I will say.
Yeah, but like...
I don't hate Morgan Geekie.
I look at the Sabres center depth chart of like Kulik, McLeod, Oslund, Krebs, and I'm like, okay, I honestly trust Kulik and McLeod more than their depth chart at the top of it with Zaka and Mittelstadt.
Yeah,
it's in the same neighborhood.
Let's be entirely clear. And I will say, like, that's where the Norris injury does hurt you.
It bites, yes.
Because, yeah, like, you're right. You're putting in an unproven guy in Jiří Kulik who's looked good.
He's looked good so far. He got called out after the third game.
Yep.
And he responded really well so far.
But
my favorite thing still from that Detroit game is that Zach Benson hit from Cedar, the interference call. And it's not even Cedar who goes back to try to, like, you know, play defense again after a very blatant interference hit. But Kulik just looks at the nearest Red Wing and starts shoving him.
Yep.
Like, that's clearly a penalty. I'm not going to get a penalty for this.
But that's the intangible stuff that the caller was just talking about. Of like, that's on the upswing.
That's the upswing. And that is also the true definition of being hard to play against. I said it after the Panthers game. Hard to play against also still means requiring enough skill to be a problem on the score sheet as well. That's where Benson and Doan have really thrived. It's where Kulik is kind of trying to settle in. It's, honestly, Dahlin can be that. A lot of times hard to play against when he gets into that pest mode and he really tries to upset players while doing it with some sort of questionable methods. He gets put to the box a couple times sometimes for this sort of stuff, but he does understand there's got to be a little bit of a nasty to the game.
Yeah, but I agree on the point. Up the middle, they are very weak. Ryan McLeod has had a tough start to the year. He's been able to have chunk point games here early, but for the most part, he's not the second line.
He's
center.
Not a 2C, correct.
And that is, I think that's right. I think that is where maybe the worry comes in, where especially if the top end guys do not start performing, how much is Josh Doan going to really be able to carry you? How much are we really going to be able to have those Jack Quinn games where, I mean, we mentioned it, he does it under 12 minutes of ice time, but he has 3 points. But is that going to be a sustainable thing?
And all eyes are going to be now on the question of what's Jason Zucker's injury status going to be like for Friday. Yeah. So that's going to be another one there. If there's another call-up, that doesn't look good for that at the very least. But there's still opportunity there. If you take an injured squad and put the business to Toronto, even if you split it, I'm here.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Before we hit our next timeout, enter at WGR550.com for your chance to win a free home heating system courtesy of T-Mark Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Whether your home needs a furnace, boiler, or ductless heating pump, T-Mark's got you covered. The last day to enter is October 26, 2025. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. This is WGR.
No. Tyson Koshek. Like that one?
I mean, I wasn't ready for it.
You've been working on your skating in the offseason. This is impressive.
You want to get over here.
He's back. Oh,
yeah, who are Tyson Koshek. I just scored, didn't I?
Who are your early favorite cup winners right now? Early favorites.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Shaquille O'Neal there.
Tyson Koshek.
With the TNT crew last night. His NBA also is getting underway this week. I love Shaq. I love that whole Inside the NBA crew. Like, it's such a good crew.
They're still a good crew on a different network, but it's okay.
It's fine. It's still, but I think for me, it's the core group.
It's that group.
It's still there.
I do like that they're still in the studios too.
No idea what you're talking about.
That was great though. Like, hey, who's your cup favorite? Yeah, no, don't ask me that.
Brave to ask that question, and I commend the host for doing that.
Yes, but that was still just genuinely funny. Of like, hey, yeah, who's your cup favorite? Nope. Nah, man.
Not a shot, dude.
Nah, man.
You're lucky you got Tyson Koshek out of me, all right?
Yes. I mean, he did give us Shaq Hyman.
That's right.
In the playoffs, and then Tyson Koshek.
By the way, speaking of the NBA, we did mention it right at the top of the show, and we've only got a few moments here left. But again, if you have not heard, multiple arrests have been made involving the NBA with the FBI's federal gambling investigation sitting Portland Trailblazers coach Chauncey Billups, and then Miami Heat guard Terry Rozier. They're not connected in the exact same thing. It sounds more like Billups was involved in an illegal poker ring that involved the mafia and everything like that. I have not been able to listen to it. We've been doing the show while it's been going on. The FBI did have their press conference, but this is a pretty insane thing right at the start of the season
Yeah, that's the other thing. Hey, the NBA season opened up.
Portland's first game was last night.
And their coach is arrested.
Yeah. Portland's first game was last night against Minnesota. Today, they are likely looking for a new head coach. He's probably out forever.
Wild.
We'll see what happens there. Sabres Live coming up next. This is WGR.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.